Hello and welcome back to Britpop History, the podcast where we are reliving the Britpop years 30 years later. In real life, it's August 2023, but here at Britpop History, we are looking back to July 1993. We're spoiled for choice this month when it comes to great Britpop moments, as many of the big players, as well as some lesser-known artists, were all hitting UK charts. We will dig into a few of the stories here, as there's some great bands you may have forgotten about, or you may have never heard of, plus we'll be looking into some fascinating connections to other major Britpop artists. However, our main focus today is the return of the Modfather, as Paul Weller is back with a bang, with single Sunflower hitting the charts at number 16. This was the first release from his Wild Wood album, and while last year we talked about the Paul Weller LP, which got him back into the public consciousness after the sad end of the Style Council, in fairness it was this single and then this album that really lit the fuse of the next phase of Weller's career, and in doing so was a major inspiration and catalyst to a lot of the other new bands coming through. First off though, as ever, let's look back at what was going on in the news. In UK politics, the long-standing Tory government suffers another in a series of embarrassing by-election defeats, this time in the Christchurch by-election, losing a seat held since 1910 to the Liberal Democrats, who received twice as many votes. In the House of Commons, Labour leader John Smith continually lands verbal blows on the under-pressure Conservative leader John Major. Flanked by rising young stars of the party, 42-year-old Shadow Chancellor Gordon Brown and 40-year-old Shadow Home Secretary Tony Blair. Here's John Smith in the House of Commons the previous month, June 1993.
Not even the most inventive or ruthless scaremonger amongst my honourable friends would have had the audacity to allege that any government could possibly be so consistently incompetent, so hopelessly accident-prone, so foolishly inept. I select but a few of the Prime Minister's recent triumphs. The billions of pounds lost in the panic and fiasco of Black Wednesday. The grievous damage to our energy resources, which the disastrous pit closures programme has inflicted upon this country. The shady double-dealing in the metric structural affair. The hopelessly bungled scandal of the education tests. And a disaster waiting to happen in the privatisation of our railways. And in response to the plummeting popularity of the administration and of himself, revealed at Newbury and in the Shire County elections, we have the Prime Minister's botched reshuffle. If we were to offer this tale of events to the BBC Light Entertainment Department as a script for a programme, I think the producers of Yes Minister would have turned it down as hopelessly over the top. I think it might have even been too much, for some mothers do have them. But, Madam Speaker, the tragedy for us all, the tragedy for us all is that it is really happening. It is fact, not fiction. The man with the non-Midas touch is in charge. No wonder we live in a country where the Grand National doesn't start an hotel. Where the Grand National doesn't start and hotels fall into the sea.
At Wimbledon, 22-year-old Pete Sampras beats Jim Courier to win his first of an eventual seven Wimbledon singles titles. In the women's competition, dominant two-time defending champion Steffi Graf three-peated, winning her fifth of also seven Wimbledon titles, beating Jana Novotná in the final. And in football, Roy Keane becomes the most expensive ever signing in British football, going to Manchester United from Nottingham Forest for what at the time was considered an astronomical fee of £3.7 million. That is now less than what Cristiano Ronaldo apparently gets as his weekly wage.
First major instalment on Roy Keane's transfer fee had been repaid. A two-goal introduction at Old Trafford for the man dubbed the new Brian Robson. United have broken the British transfer record, investing £3.75 million in a player for the future. Keane's introduction to the club had actually come on the summer tour to South Africa. It helped him acclimatise to life in the big time, to life with the champions.
It's a bit different, you know, it's a bit more high profile. But I'm enjoying it. I've only been here a couple of days, obviously, and I'm just trying to get settled in now.
They didn't make it easy for him. In baking heat, Keane was pushed through a pre-season stint that would have finished lesser men.
What time, right? Super time, right?
Pretty hard. Pretty tough going, yeah. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it just about.
Keane's integration had begun. United had demonstrated their belief in planning for the future by buying the best young talent around.
Just everything about the club, you know. I was very impressed with the manager. There's so many things, you know, European football. They've got such a great team, a great stadium, great fans. I could be here till tomorrow to tell them why I'd sign for United. But basically, you know, they've got a good team. They're going to be around for the next 5-10 years winning trophies, and that's what I want to do.
In the UK box office, two films dominated. First off, Sylvester Stallone's Cliffhanger, which reached the summit of the box office chart for 3 weeks before Steven Spielberg's dinosaur flick, Jurassic Park, roared to the number one spot for its first of 8 weeks at number one. It would break multiple box office records in the process, including the highest opening weekend ever to that point, with £4.875 million. And personally, when I think of 1993, I think of Jurassic Park.
There it is.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
We've made living biological attractions so astounding that they'll capture the imagination of the entire planet.
The most phenomenal discovery of our time.
How'd you do this?
Becomes the greatest adventure of all time.
Can I touch it?
Sure.
Universal Pictures presents...
You feel that?
Hold on to your butts.
A Steven Spielberg film.
Fences are failing all over the park.
Yeah, that's nice. Gotta go.
An adventure...
Look out! Go!
Can't get Jurassic Park back online.
65 million years in the making. Jurassic Park.
So back to the music, and Weller, and Sunflower. By this point in his career, Weller had already achieved significant success as the frontman of The Jam in the late 70s and early 80s, and then with the Star Council throughout the 80s. Both of these bands had left a mark on British music history, with The Jam known for their punk-infused new wave sound and socially conscious lyrics, while the Star Council incorporated elements of soul, jazz and pop. Sunflower itself carries a distinctly different musical direction from Weller's previous work. Sunflower is characterised by its layered guitars, riffing and chiming away, while flutes and Moog provide various layers, with Weller's soulful Steve Marriott-esque vocals giving it a classic later 60s, early 70s vibe. And while the lyrics are actually really sad, now you're gone, I feel so lone, I miss you so, the passionate delivery and upbeat instrumentation make it a classic that you can't help but sing along to. And for my money, this is one of the strongest numbers in his entire back catalogue. Noel Gallagher clearly agrees, as the chorus melody of Oasis track Where Did It All Go Wrong certainly has a passing resemblance to the chorus here. When we look back at Britpop, we often talk about bands. The bands that came through in the 90s. And yet, Paul Weller is a huge part of that and is a bit of an anomaly. First off, he wasn't a band, he was a solo artist, which was very rare at the time. And secondly, having got famous so young in the Jam, when he was still just a teenager, he was only really a few years older than many of the Britpop generation. At the release of Sunflower, he was just 35, and yet so many of that generation, he was seen as a legendary figure from this previous era, many of whom had grown up worshipping the Jam.
It was the first generation of musicians I felt I had anything in common with, even though I was 10 years older than them. There was no one in the 80s I ever related to. And meeting Noel and people like that, Graham and Damon from Burr, I mean, they were people with a similar musical vision, I would say. I certainly couldn't remember feeling like that before.
The Jam generation just came through, you know. We were Jam fans. You know, that's my big things with the Jam and the Smiths, you know what I mean? And the Jam made way for the Smiths, who then split up, and they made way for the Stone Roses, who then split up and they made way for us, you know. So, just our little, you know, our little mod revivalist generation come through, man, and check for the man.
Well, I mentioned Blur there, and they continued to promote Modern Life is Rubbish, which, after having been released in May, had already dropped out of the charts after just 3 weeks. The previous single, For Tomorrow, had only reached number 28 in the charts, and they would have hoped that this new single, Chemical World, with its huge chorus, stop-start rhythm and bombastic Stephen Street production, would have done a lot better. Unfortunately, it did exactly the same, stalling at number 28. It did, however, get some traction in America, which was unusual for Blur at this time, making 27 on the alternative Airplay chart. This may have been due in part to the track being featured on the MTV show Beavis and Butthead. It didn't necessarily get a glowing review from the legendarily crass duo, but all publicity is good publicity, I suppose.
Look, I got that's a good wiener!
So? You are too.
Yeah! Oh, yeah. But that's different.
What's different about it?
It's a different wiener.
Yeah. That's probably bigger, too.
Whoa, check it out. I'd like to try peeing on a snail sometime. That'd be cool, yeah.
You want to pee on a snail?
Yeah, it's like, I'd like to pee anywhere outside, but, you know, I just feel like, you know, peeing on a snail, you know, that'd be something different.
How about peeing in the toilet?
Oh, yeah. Haven't done that in a while.
Check it out, a wolf.
Wow, really? I'd like to try peeing on a wolf sometime. That'd be cool.
Beavis, if you tried to pee on a wolf, he would bite your wiener off.
Yeah. I'd like to try maybe peeing on one of these guys sometime, you know, like while they're asleep.
Yeah. You must get tired of peeing on yourself all the time.
Shut up, buddy. You know, and I was like, you know, talking about peeing on those wolves and stuff.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't really gonna do it, you know. It's like, you know, it like helps to talk about it.
Funny coincidence, but the Manics also had a second single from a second album out this month, as La Tristeza Durera was the second release from the Gold Against the Soul album that we discussed last episode. The title La Tristeza Durera comes from the apparent last words of legendary painter Vincent van Gogh. And you know what? I never really understood what the lyrics were in this song until researching this episode. So forgive me if you know this, but seeing as I'm a big Manics fan and never knew, I'm guessing there's a good chance that quite a lot of you didn't either. The song tells the story of a war veteran, as per the line, wheeled out once a year like a cenotaph souvenir. It details his feelings of sadness and loneliness, And then we end the song with the journey of his medal. I sold my medal, it paid a bill. It sells at market stalls, parades, Milan catwalks. I love that. This is the Manics at their poetic best. This is another song with a desperately sad lyric if you think about it, but yeah, it feels strangely cathartic to sing it out loud. There were two albums of note out this month. The Jesus and Mary Chain released Sound of Speed, a compilation of singles and rare tracks. This reached number 15 in the charts, the same number that Blur had got to with their mainstream full album release, Modern Life is Rubbish, 2 months earlier. Crazy when you think about it. It was also a big month for Catherine Wheel, releasing single Crank and second album Chrome. For the lowest off Great Yarmouth Shoegazers, the single had hit 66 in the UK and 5 in the US Alternative Airplay chart. The album, the follow-up to debut Ferment, was a tighter and heavier affair than the debut, with many fans feeling it is the strongest of their 5 studio albums. World Party made the charts this month with single Give It All Away. They're an interesting band. Having formed in 1986 by former Waterboys member Carl Wallinger, this was the second single from their most successful album, Bang, which had made number 2 in the charts earlier in the year. Maybe more interesting, though, is the connections through World Party to other major acts of the era. Both their first two albums feature contributions from Sinead O'Connor, and Wallinger worked on her debut, The Lion and the Cobra. I love Sinead O'Connor, and I was desperately gutted to hear that she died earlier this year, in real time now, back in 2023. Other members of the band include Dave Catlin Birch, who also played Paul McCartney in the Bootleg Beatles, including with Oasis on tour in 95 and 96. Also in the band was former Icicle Works drummer Chris Sharrock, who had gone to play with Lightning Seeds, then Robbie Williams, and then Oasis. Following his short stint with Oasis, he would join BDI and then Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, where he still drums to this day. And speaking of Robbie Williams, World Party also featured Guy Chambers at various points, who had gone to work extensively with Robbie. Guy also went on to form the Lemon Trees in 1992. Side note, Lemon Trees also had a hit this month, I Can't Face the World, which made 52, the last of their 5 top 75 hits. In 1997, World Party released their 4th album, Egyptology, featuring the track She's the One, to critical acclaim, winning an Ivor Novello Award, but very little commercial success. Robbie would then cover the track She's the One and score a massive worldwide hit with it, while never publicly acknowledging it was a cover of the World Party original. And a pretty close cover at that, to be fair. If there's somebody, she's the one. American band Jellyfish scored the last of their 6 UK top 40 singles with Big Mistake this month. The San Francisco rockers pushed back against the dominant grunge sound with more theatrical Queen and Beach Boys inspired upbeat prog rock. The link to Britpop is that their bass player Tim Smith, from 92 until their split in 94, would go on to play guitar for Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds from 2011 to 2016. Even though he wasn't really a guitar player, he was a bass player, but anyway. When Gem Archer was available again following the breakup of BDI in 2016, that was the end of Tim. There were a number of other indie hits this month, including Ruined in a Day by New Order, Queen Jane by Kingmaker, Radio by Teenage Fan Club, the I Need Another EP by Dodgy, Belarus by The Levellers, more on them next month, Wallflower by Megacity 4, and a cover of the Bob Dylan classic It's All Over Now Baby Blue by Milltown Brothers. Meanwhile, in Manchester, on the 21st of July 1993, Oasis perform at the Boardwalk for the very last time. The gig is also noteworthy for being the first Oasis gig to be reviewed by the NME and possibly the first live performance of Dixie's Dinner. Earlier in the month, on July the 2nd, Alan McGee met Marcus Russell for the first time at Creation Records office in London. The purpose of the meeting is to begin contract negotiations between Oasis and Creation Records. That will do it for this month. I will see you again next month for August 1993, as Oasis record their first radio session, while Boo Radleys take some giant steps, and Divine Comedy enjoy some liberation. I'll see you next time.